This is a HeadGum Podcast.
In 86, N.M. Martin wrote the first book of what became a cult. Now it's time for Babysitter's Club.
Well, I really crammed that fucking book all the way down my yum gullet.
Yeah. When did you start it?
At 5 p.m. And then I had to put the child to bed right at 7 p.m.
You texted me earlier. I
jammed it in my yum hole.
Daycare, and you said, need to jam this book down my yum hole. Might want to start a little later than usual. And I thought to myself, it's kind of a long book.
Yeah.
I hope he doesn't mean that he's just starting it now.
Yeah. No, I was.
Because I'm a little worried that A, he'll be able to finish, and B, I hate to admit this, Jack, after all this time on this, what is likely the last episode ever, that you sort of do a lot of the heavy lifting.
You want me to do the heavy lifting.
You do often do the heavy lifting.
Yeah, I often
do. And you like take a lot of notes and you figure out a lot of stuff and themes in the books. And I just sort of read it and like...
Yeah, and try to knock me off balance.
Rasp on. ride this bull called Jack Shepherd for as long as I can.
I'm the boring old speedboat and you're the water skier.
Yeah. And like, sure, is everyone paying attention to the boring old speedboat? No, no one
cares. No, no one cares.
Everyone's
about
paying
that.
Attention to the water guy skier doing the tricks all the flips and tricks.
Loop de loops.
Yeah.
But what happens if the speedboat stops?
Yeah, exactly.
It's just an asshole
just
in
like
the water.
Treading water. That's not fun to watch.
Well, I was too busy cramming this fucking book into my book crevice to properly take notes. So I'm this is where you carried me.
Oh. Think about what you just said. Would the speedboat ever ask the water skier to to pull him?
Let me turn that around on you. If you were sitting on the beach and you saw a water skier towing a speedboat around, would you sit up and pay attention?
I'd probably leave.
Yes, you would. It would be pretty interesting.
Like, awfully slow.
How's he balancing? How is he generating motion?
So we're both a little underprepared for this, huh? And it's so fitting because it's the last episode.
It's the last episode. Let's not scare the whole audience away, I would say.
Yeah. Well, we don't. I mean,
hopefully folks are used to us saying this.
Behind us is 5 years of rich, delightful media.
And seemingly endless.
Covering the Babysitter's Club books.
Yeah. Ahead of
in
us is
this moment. That we're in now, Jack, is this book, Babysitter's Club. Does it have a... It's just called Babysitter's
Club
The Summer Before.
The Summer Before.
And in front of us is an inky black miasma.
Yes.
That there might be something out there.
Mm-hmm.
There might not be. The only way to find out is to take a step forward.
Yeah.
And see what comes at us.
Yeah.
But we don't have to worry about that until after this episode is done.
And it could be like what happens when you walk into a black hole.
We could get spaghettification.
We might become infinitely long and infinitely thin.
Hell yeah.
Which I could stand to during the holidays. I've been eating a lot. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, buddy. I'm already infinitely long. If you catch my meaning.
That you're tall?
I was talking about my ding dong, which...
Okay.
I don't often talk about my ding dong.
No, I know. That's fine. I'll give you the space if there's more you want to say on the topic.
Is there more I want to say about my ding dong? I don't think so.
Okay.
that one feels like I'm avoiding talking about it.
Yeah.
So I'll just say it's unremarkable. I would say normal.
Okay.
Normal ding dong.
And this has been Ding Dong Talk.
Ding Dong Talk. And your and you and yours?
It's unremarkable.
You're British, so our ding dongs probably don't look the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi, and welcome to the Babysitter's Club. I'm Jack Shepherd.
I'm Tanner Greenring.
And this is a podcast where two men talk about their unremarkable ding-dongs.
Just totally normal ding-dongs.
This week, we're going to be discussing a Babysitter's Club book called The Summer Before by... The Hand That Shakes, the Princess of the Prince of Town, St. Annabelle Matthews Martin, Stormborn Soul, Skinner, Mother of Clocks, and Bane to Bat. She is the first of her name, the last of her kind, and the last hope for humankind. And this is the last book. Or is it the first?
A little bit of both.
In the Sitter cycle. It's a little bit of both. And she has this weird intro to the book, doesn't she? That, like, she doesn't close it out. It's just this, like, weird, like, couple paragraphs. That's like, Christy is writing in a tone that makes her seem older than she ever has before, where it's like, maybe she's like an old, like, Titanic lady.
Oh, right.
And she, like, just dropped her amulet in the ocean, and she's like, the Babysitter's Club the summer before. Right. And then, like, she's, like, using big words and shit, and she seems, like, wise.
Yeah.
But that was then. That was before the event.
I imagine it was a tough needle to thread for Anne.
Yeah.
Who wrote this book in 2011 when it came out. But needed to cast her mind back to 1986.
Yeah. No, interesting. And did you catch that as well? That it's like this weird, like, it feels like this, it's like not Christy at the end of Friends Forever.
Right.
It's Christy at the end of her life.
Right.
Looking back.
I didn't pick up on that, but it does make sense.
And it's a powerful
tale. She would maybe, like, lament all the people she's lost. Like, I'm sure Elizabeth and Watson are both dead.
Right.
Right. Stacey's.
Yeah. Oh, so almost certainly. Yeah. I mean, it's Christie's. I would imagine just based on her writing, it doesn't give a marker in time, but I would say Christie is like 97.
Her wife is probably long dead.
Oh, yeah. Long past.
Yeah, but she,
you know, she married an older, like, woman.
She doesn't think about any of that. All she can think about is
Claudia and
the heady
Stace
days of the babies
and Marianne and Frankie, of course.
And Frankie. Well, it's probably because Frankie. Who could forget Frankie?
Yeah.
It's probably because she was trapped in this moment. This is the beginning of the cycle for her.
Right,
she's
gone
when
back.
When she casts her mind back
into
her life,
she
only sees two things. She sees the time before the Babysitter's Club and the Babysitter's Club.
Right.
And all of a sudden she's looking down at her hands and they're decrepit and wrinkled and she's like...
So, yeah,
what's going on? The Halloween Hop is next week, and I'm just, I don't know what's happening to me.
So this is the consequence. So Anne was able to keep them young and alive and keep their friendship together by forcing them to repeat the eighth grade over and over and over again. But eventually, once they got spun out of that time loop, they spun out as, like, old age pensioners.
Or... Yeah, because
that's what happened in Titanic too. Because it's been a while since I watched it, but, like, she's on the boat and she's like a young babe.
She makes whoopee with that man in the car,
and then they get on the door, but there's not room for him. And you've explained to me before that it's just that wouldn't have been room for him because of buoyancy, and then she's an old lady almost immediately.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
And I'm trying to think if that's relevant to the Babysitter's Club at all. Sorry, my wife keeps texting me because she wants to watch the Brooklyn Nets game.
Tell her that you're recording your fucking hit podcast.
Well, she said, you're recording already, right? And I said, yes, but I think I can help you.
She needs your help.
You were vamping?
let me be clear. The only reason that what I was doing seemed like vamping is because you would stop paying attention to me. What I was actually doing, as is the case now, because I could see that you're fucking typing an email to your wife, what I was actually doing is talking to you. I was engaging in a conversation, a two-way interlocution that requires an interlocutor, famously.
Yeah. Gosh.
Doesn't it? And yet, I was not. Do you think? Let me ask you this. Do you always think when I'm talking to you that I'm vamping?
Gosh. All right, I'm back. What were you saying?
Nothing. Nothing of import.
Everyone who's ever talking to me is vamping.
Until they become interesting.
Or until they,
become more interesting than your fucking phone or whatever.
Yeah. I'm just like, oh, what?
Yeah. I think we should describe the book. I jammed this novel so far down my yum yum crease.
Yeah.
And it got stuck all the way back in there.
Yeah.
That I didn't have time to like
little
write
tendrils
a,
came out. Your yeah. yum yum crease looks like a Sarlacc pit.
Yeah, it does. Exactly. Yeah. And it's all the way, it's down in there further than
Boba.
I was going to say Boba, but he came back, didn't he?
He did, although do we...
Yeah, we probably shouldn't talk about it.
Right.
So, who else? Let's just say who else went into the Sarlacc pit, because I think it's important.
Let me look it up.
No, don't look it up.
Tanner Googles. Who fell into the
Sarlacc
pit? Mm-hmm. Suseijo.
Who?
Someone called Suseijo.
Okay.
Hoping this page has some notable Sarlacc victims.
Notable Sarlacc victims? I'm out of the... Well, I'm not out of the content game, but I tell you, man, I would click on an article that was called Notable Sarlacc Victims.
Unfortunately, I don't think there's that many... Notable. Spotlight.
Maybe I got to write one. Hang up my Spurs for one last ride.
Oh gosh, get him. Yeah, get him down. Suseijo.
Okay, yeah. So I cram this.
Was the Sarlacc of the Great Pit of Carcoon? Wait, no.
That's the name of the
Suseijo. Is a Sarlacc.
Okay. Well, this is that bad now. And now we're done with this.
Oh,
and just
wait, Jack.
No, what?
I think the Sarlacc pit is a little like the sandworms in Dune. Listen to this.
Okay.
And this is interesting, and this is going to be interesting for our listeners.
And it's relevant. Try to bring it back to
the very
the book,
young
at least.
Suseijo fell into the Sarlacc pit around 4,000 years before the Battle of Yavin. After being swallowed by the Sarlacc, he passed time by trading stories with an unlucky Jedi who shared his fate. Around 4 ABY, that's after the Battle of Yavin, his personality had merged with that of the Sarlacc, which had digested him alive for thousands of years. While it absorbed his consciousness.
Okay.
Isn't that interesting?
It is quite interesting.
Thus, Suseijo's personality embodied the creature, rendering it indistinguishable from the ancient sentient. Suseijo introduced himself to Boba Fett when the bounty hunters suffered the same fate.
Oh.
Wow.
Okay.
Throughout Fett's stay, Suseijo the Sarlacc and Fett had several lengthy conversations. You know what? I love Star Wars. I love it. I love all of the extended universe shit.
Yeah.
But Boba Fett falling into the Sarlacc pit
and then just like
having a chat with Suseijo the Sarlacc.
Yeah.
I'm not here for it.
No, I'm not. I was here for it until that.
Yeah.
I was here for like the merged consciousness and shit. But I'm not here for that. And I'm sorry that we subjected our listeners to it, probably, unless I cut it all out.
Right. Very interesting, though.
Very interesting. You know what I think is we should describe
already?
This novel.
Okay.
No, I was thinking we should say what happens. We've been talking a little bit about the hero cycle, so I'm gonna introduce a story within a story.
Old Joe.
From this novel that has
Big
a perfect...
Joe.
Yes.
Joseph Campbell.
Yes, thank you. What I'd like to do is tell you a story from the book, and then you can tell me the wider story of the book. But I think this little story is just like it's a tiny short story that Anne puts in the beginning.
Okay.
That's like a paragraph. But it's like it's got a beginning, it's got a middle, it's got an end, it's got the fucking call rejected. You know, the fucking dark woods. I don't know the whole fucking
the
Joseph
Sentinel.
Campbell shit. But every story is the same, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't it? And they're all the same.
Every story is the exact same. And Shakespeare wrote every single one of them. And then Joe Campbell was like, yep, here's what Shakespeare wrote them all.
Okay. That's, I guess.
And that's and, literary history right there.
Yeah.
And then
well,
before,
and here's one.
And
it's within a story.
Nothing.
Yeah.
A void.
So I'm going to describe this story by reading it, and then you describe it.
What are you doing?
The
are you whipping incense?
There's a fly in my house. There's
like
a fly in my house. It's not
it
interesting.
Seems like you're doing like a sage rubbing.
There's a fly in my house.
Okay. And what's that sound?
Sarah's using the blender.
She waited until you shouted to like cover it. She's like, she's been sitting there ever since you started. She's like, the second he shouts, I'm going to hit it.
She's making soup.
That's nice.
Listen. I'm going to read you a story.
Soup. It's way less labor intensive.
Listen, why do you want to talk about that other than the thing that I'm saying that's interesting? I'm going to read you a story and then you describe this book. How about that?
Okay.
Ready? While we ate our snack, David Michael told me a long story about a boy in his class who, at snack time that day, had first said he felt like he was going to barf, then had said he felt okay, then had gagged, although nothing further had happened for 5 minutes. And finally had barfed in a rather spectacular manner all across the snack table.
Right.
But none of it got on me, concluded my brother with some pride, or on my snack.
The snacks, right.
It's just like a perfect... There's so much in there.
Yeah.
It's so powerful.
It's quite a story. It's got a beginning, a middle, and an end.
There's the call rejected where he's like, thinks he's going to barf, and then he doesn't. Yeah.
There's the sentinel.
Yeah.
The guardian.
And then he has like the dark night of the soul, you know, where yeah. like fucking...
He goes into the cave, right? The dark cave.
Yeah. Yaks it all over the fucking yeah. table.
And then he's redeemed.
And then the return to home. He returns home, but he's wiser. And like none of it gets on David Michael's snack. Right. It's so fucking good.
That is sort of the story of barfing. You know, you always come back home again. You're like, I feel a lot better.
Yeah.
I'm ready to drink more.
Yeah.
Is what you always think.
That's what you always think. I want you to say everything that happened in this book. I don't care how you do it. I don't care how long it takes you.
Okay.
I just want you to describe this book. It was pretty good.
You don't care
I
how long
was
it takes
too
me.
Busy just fucking stuffing it piece by piece into my yum yum creases I've described to really decide whether or not I was enjoying it in the sub 2 hours that I read all 200 plus pages of this fucker. But I think it was good.
Interior. Unassuming house in Stony Brook, Connecticut. The year 1985. A young woman, 11 years old, sits at her desk. She's also 96.
And she's, yeah, and she looks like Rose from the Titanic.
She's
and
both.
Chrissy from the Babysitter's Club TV Netflix show all at once.
And she writes, we see her mm-hmm. finishing her journal. And it says, there and back again, the story of Christy Thomas.
Yep. Yep.
And she closes the book and she goes and lies down in bed.
Yeah.
She closes her eyes. And we fade to black.
Wow.
And the scene fades in again.
Yeah.
And we see the same young woman who's 96.
Yeah.
Who's now 11.
Right.
Again, still.
Yeah.
But she's also just 11.
And always, yeah.
And she's sitting in her desk writing a...
A letter to her daddy.
A letter to Pat.
Yeah.
Pat Daddy.
Old Pat Daddy.
And it says, my birthday's coming up. Please come.
Be here.
To Stony Brook, Connecticut and join me. She doesn't actually say that. She just says like, hey, my birthday's coming up. Hope you're doing
yeah.
good. She sends a letter. She gets a bounce back. Pat. Daddy yeah. Pat isn't at the address she has on file.
Right.
So she calls her friend Marianne.
Her loyal friend.
Yeah. And expresses her disappointment.
Yeah.
Cut
and what
to.
Does Marianne do?
Marianne Spear, age 11.
Yeah. Oh, you're really doing this whole book. I like it, chapter by chapter.
Yeah. She is sitting in her house and she needs to hurry off the phone because she has a very strict father.
Too strict.
Doesn't let her do anything.
Yeah.
Dresses her every day.
Yeah.
Puts pigtails in her hair.
Yeah.
Doesn't let her babysit.
Right.
This young woman's name is Marianne Spear.
Yeah.
She's got some nude dolls.
She does, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Some nude old dolls, and maybe this would be a time to take a pause and think about that.
Okay. There's a lot of plot to cover.
The pace I just want to say, and I hate to say this, and I hate to bring this up, but it was all dolls the whole time, wasn't it?
It was all dolls. Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
And it's dolls. And Marianne goes into the attic and gets some creepy old fucking nude dolls that belong to Alma, didn't she?
Yeah. I seem to remember, and I think this is Anne toying with us. And, like, it makes me wonder, like, has Anne always been kind of pulling the strings in this reality and in our own?
Yeah.
But I seem to remember a whole book about Marianne discovering the
I thought this too.
In the attic.
Yeah. Yeah. And she discovered it. And in this, she's like, she's
I've
like,
always had
well, okay. So I've got a few things that bring
in
this together.
In fact, in this one, she's like, I'm growing sick of these keepsakes.
Yeah. Let me tell you two things that bring this together. Okay. Here's one. I just want to read this. The box held clues to my mother, and I was eager to learn as much as I could, but I felt I had to do so without Dad knowing about it. In fact, I had mentioned the box only to Christy and had shown it to no one. My favorite things in the box were my mother's dolls. There were four of them, and they were medium size. Four of them, just like the babysitters, huh? Interesting. Yeah, interesting. Interesting.
Seven deadly
dolls. Bigger than Barbie, smaller than American girls. They weren't fancy, they weren't antiques, and they weren't valuable except to me. To me, they were four keys to Alma Baker Spear. The soul baker, and I guess maybe she's baking souls for the dolls. Let's put a pin in that.
Yeah.
As you have mentioned, we know when that box is discovered, and it's like 2 years from now.
Right.
Not now. Not when they're 11. It's later. Here's a theory I have about why this fucking maybe makes sense. Did you notice the shooting star motif?
Yeah, it's a lot. In fact, I want to introduce a segment.
Okay.
If I can.
Sure.
It's called... Is this true?
Okay.
Aren't you afraid to be in charge? No, I love being in charge. Now I was wondering if calling Marianne was a good idea after all. Let me talk to my father, she said. I'll call you tomorrow. This is when Christy is inviting Marianne onto a babysitting job at the Pikes. I hung up the phone, wandered to the kitchen, and looked out the window. And that was when I saw the first shooting star of the summer. I should have felt elated. Instead, I sense trouble. Is that a thing?
The first shooting star of the summer.
We're all supposed to look out for the first shooting star of the summer.
This is why this stood out to me. I think that shooting stars are not that common, and there's not like a first one of the summer.
And I don't think of them as like a summertime thing.
But like throughout this entire book, like they're constantly like anytime there's a pause, they're like I marked them all. By the way, there's a shooting star when Marianne first agrees to have her first babysitting job.
Mm-hmm.
There's a shooting star weirdly when Charlie agrees to take on a babysitting job. There are notably no shooting stars when Claudia betrays Janine by stealing her crush.
Right.
We'll get to that. There is a shooting star for Christie's birthday party. There is a shooting star after Janine and Claudia make up. There is notably, although they look for them, no shooting star the day before school starts.
Okay.
And then finally, there is a shooting star after Christy has the idea for the Babysitters Club. Tanner, my theory, because this is too many shooting stars.
Right, too many. And they're showing up in too many notable places.
A shooting star is anytime Anne changes something in the Matrix.
Interesting. It's like, it's a...
Anne's going back in time.
It's a...
and changing shit in the fucking Matrix? In the Matrix, it's deja vu.
Right,
in the movie The Matrix.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. For Anne, that's the signal that she's like shifted something. So these are all things that she's fucking... I bet there was a shooting star when Marianne discovered Alma Baker, the Soul Baker's stuff in the attic 2 years before she actually did.
Right.
Right?
Or when, like, Christy came up with the idea for the Babysitter's Club.
Right.
Like, one book before she was supposed to.
Yeah, a whole book.
Yeah. Or where Stacey's diabetes was almost discovered by Emily Bernstein.
Well, I know, but no. Here's it. Think about it this way, Tanner. Christy, in this book, much like you and I remember, Christy comes up with the idea for the Babysitter's Club right on cue, right? She goes to, we get it in the book. She goes to Mr. Redmond's class. Mr. Redmond, she's rude to Mr. Redmond. Decorum. He makes her write an essay on decorum. While she's thinking about it, she comes up with the idea for the Babysitter's Club. That's what you and I remember,
right?
Just like we would if someone had changed the Matrix to have that always be the case for us.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's, we just, all we know is that that's changed.
Right. Gosh, that'll bake your noodle.
And it has baked my noodle, hasn't it?
That'll bake your fucking noodle. Actually, yeah. I guess it's a segment here.
Okay, great. I've captured
a note that says, Jesus, this baked my noodle.
Okay, great. And it's a kind of a noodle, like a spaghetti type of segment?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, I had a different, very different idea for my party this year. This is Claudia.
Mm-hmm.
I was dreaming of a boy-girl pool party. Oh, we didn't have a pool, but our next door neighbors, the Goldmans, did.
Yeah.
Why is it you say Goldmans and not Goldmen? Oh, well.
Wow.
Why is it you say Goldmans instead of Goldmen?
Wow, that's good. And that baked your noodle. And also what baked my noodle about that was who the fuck are the fucking Goldmans?
Yeah, who are the Goldmans? And like, who are half the people in this book?
And who's Frankie? And how come we never heard of him before?
They're just inventing, but whoever wrote this book, Anne or whomever.
Yeah.
Some uncredited ghostwriter who's just making people up.
Yeah.
There's Frankie. There's all these like kids that like Claudia's like cool with.
Like, yeah.
Dory Wallingford, a name like I guess I've heard.
Yeah, no, I've heard of Dory Wallingford. She's like, she has it. She's like into Logan.
I found a pad of paper and headed it Geust list. Then I wrote Geust. Boys on one side of the paper and Grills on the other. Under boys, I wrote Pete Black, Rick, Rick Chow,
Howie,
Kurt, Darnell. What the fuck?
Who the fuck are
under
these
Grills? I wrote Dory Wallingford.
Yep. We know who
Emily Bernstein.
Hell yes.
Polly, Christy, and Marianne.
Wow.
You can't just, and it's a little late in the canon.
It's a little late, yeah.
To be making up Howie, Kurt, Darnell, and Polly. I'm pretty dubious about Dory. Apparently Jack knows her, but.
No, Dory Wallingford is real. I think Logan maybe even dates her a little bit.
Ooh.
Yeah. But, yeah, so there's a lot in this book. There's a lot. And there's dolls, right? And dolls did it.
The dolls did it. And
what are the dolls doing? They're like, they're driving Marianne and Christy and Claudia apart because Marianne and Christy show up with the dolls. They're like, maybe Claudia can make clothes for these naked dolls. They need to be clothed like Adam and Eve.
Right.
Need to cover Claudia, God, it's so fucking resonant. Yeah. Hey, Claudia, can you get some, like, sew some fig leaves together to discover the disgusting genitals? Because they're very anatomically correct. The
dolls. Yeah.
Yeah. Their dongs are infinitely long and
anatomically
thin.
Correct and unkempt.
Yeah. And so they bring them over and Claudia is like, fuck you. But what about that? Adam and Eve, that's resonant, right? This is this fucking prelapsarian fucking shit, right? Like as close to Garden of Eden before it all goes to hell as you can get.
Right.
Right. This is when Anne is like, how can I keep them in here?
Yeah.
And then Marianne's like, these dolls are naked. We have to clothe them. And then Claudia, call rejected, says, no, I won't do it. And their friendship starts to fall apart, right? And Anne is like, Anne intervenes. And she's like, now I must go back in this fucking crazy time loop because this is after, even though it's before.
Right.
And trap you in a loop forever.
Right.
So that you'll be friends.
Right.
Wild. Wild.
I have a theory about the shooting stars while we're talking about all this.
Great. Is it as good as
Star Trek 1?
Yeah. It's film. Tough. It's tough to get through, but it's really interesting. It's got V'ger.
V'ger. And yeah. So a sentient being comes from space to Earth,
mm-hmm.
and its intentions are unclear, and it's kind of this being of pure energy.
Yeah.
And the cast and crew is not the word I'm thinking of, but...
The crew, I think.
The
is
crew
yeah.
of the Enterprise...
Yeah.
approach it and enter it. And they discover that at its core, it's the Voyager space probe.
Right.
That has
spoilers for Star Trek 1, but for God's sake, it came out like 30 years ago. So
far into space, it was way more than 30 years ago. You realize 30 years ago was 1990, right?
Oh, yeah. I watched it 30 years ago. Jesus.
It's the Voyager space probe that went so far into space that it became a god and then came back home.
Yeah.
And it was different, you know?
Yeah.
I think that these girls, having been trapped in amber, became timeless.
Okay.
And like the Great Sandworm.
Right.
From Dune.
And the Sarlacc.
And much like the Sarlacc.
Yeah.
Their consciousnesses like shed their mortal bodies.
Right.
And they became eternal celestial beings.
Right. So it's us that are watching the shooting stars. We're watching the shooting stars.
We're watching the shooting stars. And the shooting stars are them.
Okay. Yep.
It's their ever eternal beings living the same loop over and over again, watching from a evolved.
That's why they keep seeing them.
Elevated.
Yeah.
Place in this universe.
So you wouldn't see, there's no way you'd see it tons. If you saw tons of shooting stars throughout a summer, you'd be like, there's an alien attack. Or the same four celestial beings are repeating a time loop through the galaxy. And I keep seeing it, and that's the signal.
And they've become something bigger than they ever were.
Yeah, and they can't even know it.
Right, because they're seeing it. They're living in dimensions that we haven't even fathomed yet.
Right.
You know?
That's why. That's how we see them. The old lady from Titanic. And
we see them as shooting stars, but they're like these multidimensional, enormous beings, you know?
That's really beautiful. And they're large.
Well, it is large even the right word? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I guess
really.
Not. Like thinking of that's like thinking three-dimensionally, isn't
it? Right.
To be like they're large. I mean, they are large.
I guess. Probably. I don't know. Maybe they're infinitesimally small, you know?
That's really beautiful.
It's really fucking fucks your noodle, huh?
Further than stars and nearer than the eye. That's what T.S. Eliot says.
Right. And he was anti-Semitic, so.
Fuck you. I mean, yes. But fuck you.
You don't like it that's sort of my go-to.
That's not the main thing. I don't want to talk about it.
Right.
Sucks.
It kind of becomes the main thing.
I don't want to talk about that specific fucking.
No, and I wouldn't either.
Dark
that
aspect.
Was my favorite.
Fucking blot on TSA.
That was my favorite writer, and my favorite football team was.
Fuck
also
you.
Pretty racist.
It's beautiful.
Maybe kind of
nearer than
a lot of my. Choice is
further than
I
stars and nearer than the eye. Think how beautiful that is. Just let it penetrate your fucking brain for a second.
Right. And that's these girls.
Yes.
They're all around us.
Yes.
I'm swimming in Claudia right now.
Yeah. We all are. Star stuff.
We're all star stuff.
We're made out of it. Yeah. We're made out of them.
And
the
Carl Sagan, as far as I know.
Yeah.
Not racist.
Who could say? I think it's time to take a break.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye. Everybody, it's Jack again with a brand new update about the delightful family mystery mobile game June's Journey. I have been making real progress solving puzzles and getting stuff to put on my cool estate in the fun world of mystery, danger, and romance that's conjured up by June's Journey, a game set in the roaring 20s about a daring young woman named June who's traveling to her sister's estate to uncover scandalous family secrets and customizing her own luxurious estate island in the process. Tanner, unfortunately, is still pretty convinced by the ad brief we were sent that he has actually been assigned on a real secret mission to uncover the killer of June's sister, Claire. The good news is that after some extremely frustrating conversations with the unbelievably patient people at the Central Connecticut Steamship Authority, I was able to clear up the fracas regarding the steamship that Tanner rented. But the bad news is that, if I'm reading this hastily scrawled missive correctly, he appears to have gotten himself horribly lost in a hedge maze in Würzburg, which I think is in Germany. According to the secret code on the back of the letter, which, to be clear, he's just written this part upside down, he is in good spirits and he is hot on the tail of Grandma Heath, and I shouldn't worry, but could I please send him 40 ducats in an unmarked envelope so that he can bribe the butler, which sounds both complicated and questionably legal. I'm going to keep you guys posted on this, but in the meantime, you can discover your inner detective just like I have when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. I have to go. There is apparently a carrier pigeon at the door with a new message from Tanner. Tanner, the one thing we have not talked about yet that we must is Frankie, but before we do, I think once we talk about Frankie, we'll have covered most of the plot. Anne likes to write kind of plotless books that are good, but are kind of plotless.
She doesn't need plot.
She doesn't need plot. Yeah, where she's going, she doesn't need plot.
It's avant-garde, Jack.
Yeah, it's
like,
avant-garde.
It's like the book was written by Andy Warhol.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just Anne sitting in front of a camera eating a hamburger for an hour.
Yeah.
And you're like, but it's like, fuck, this is
riveting.
Art. Yeah.
But before we talk about Frankie, I do want to, this is a delicate topic to introduce given your tastes and proclivities, but I would like to,
I've got some pretty provocative tastes and proclivities.
Yeah, you certainly do, but you're not going to like this, I think, but I have to remark on a stone cold baller ass fucking move that Stacy makes in this novel.
Ugh, okay.
That fucking rules and is awesome and like 100% redeemed Stacy anything she's ever done in my eyes.
Okay.
May I?
Yeah.
You seem reluctant.
It's a slippery slope.
Okay. No, I get
you
it.
You know?
I get
one,
it.
One day you're saying that Stacy is cool and you like the thing she said, and the next day we're all marrying dogs. So
okay, and that is that where all slippery slopes end? With everybody marrying dogs?
Yeah.
Okay. I had misunderstood
that's the
concept
ditch.
Of slippery slope.
That's the big ditch of humanity.
So a slippery slope is like a Sarlacc pit, and at the bottom of it is Boba Fett having tea with
the Sarlacc pit.
The Sarlacc pit.
We're all marrying dogs.
Everyone's marrying dogs. I didn't. I thought I had understood it as a rhetorical trope, but now I really deeply understand it in a way that I didn't before. Okay,
there's so real I'm gonna try to rules be, to
yeah.
this. Yeah,
I'm going to try to be careful to cut this off, this Stacy praise off, before we get into dog marrying territory.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And just like warn me if I get too close to it.
I'll start to I'll tell you if I start to feel any like sort of romantic feelings for
you. Okay, good. A B plot or a part, there's no plot. This book has no plot. It says tone poem by Anne.
It's a tone poem. And also just to quickly interject before you get into your point.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Good. Clean. Baby.
Baby.
Sitting. Fun.
Fun. Yes.
Isn't it, good. Jack?
Yes. And there's so much of it. And it's great.
It's all babysitting.
It's all babysitting.
In fact, that's like one of the central sort of like tent poles.
Even Stacy in New York before she's met these girls is like just fucking babysitting folks in her apartment complex.
And Mary
babysitting
Ann's
anybody
entire
who walks by.
Plot device is that she's
scared
finally been invited into the world of babysitting. And it's Richard needs to like grapple with whether or not he's ready for.
Yeah, Richard is like, you can only do it if you bring someone else. And then like Miss Newton calls and is like, hey, I hear you're babysitting now. Can you like look after Jamie during his nap for 2 hours while I go to the dentist? And Marianne's like, I have to bring a friend. And Miss Newton's like, I'm not paying both of you.
I love that that's the only consideration.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm not paying two of you $4.
Yes, good clean babysitting fun. The Stacy B plot is like all about her and Lane falling out. I think that's another thing where Anne has kind of changed the matrix.
That's funny because I remember reading about that previously for the first time.
But it's also like when Lane visits and Stacy's ex-best friend, they're still friends. They're not friends by the end of the novel.
Right. But by the end of this novel,
Lane is just like a fucking awful person to Stacy.
Stain and Lacey.
Yeah. That's fine.
That's how I like to think about them.
Yeah. Stain and Lacey. That's good.
yeah, they hate each other.
Yeah, they fucking hate each other. Like, they say some like friendship ending shit to each other.
Yeah.
But here's kind of how that ends. They have this like big surprise going away party for Stacy. And Stacy calls Lane her royal meanness. Her royal meanness had evil superpowers. Mom and Mrs. Cummings, arm in arm and
just
smiling.
Just
want to
quickly
broadly
register that her royal meanness is pretty lackluster.
Yeah, no, it's not great. That's why I didn't spend much time with it.
I know you're about to do a lot of like Stacy
honoring
and Stacy defending, and I just want to quickly register.
Yeah.
She still sucks.
And would you like to also register just to be safe that dogs make great pets, but nothing more?
And that is my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, I want everyone to live the lives they want to live, but.
Okay, well, this feels like a slippery slope, the way you're talking about it.
No. I'm pretty staunchly anti-dog marriage.
Okay. Her royal meanness had evil superpowers. Mom and Mrs. Cummings, arm in arm and smiling broadly, now approached Lane and me. Lane immediately underwent a transformation. So what Lane has just done is like deliberately fucking like, oh no, this isn't. Later she pours a fucking soda down Stacy's white blouse. It's so fucked up. But she's just said some like, in this case, what?
You think she's a shapeshifter? You think she's a warg?
Do I think Lane is a warg?
Read what you just said again.
Lane immediately underwent a transformation. Yeah, now I do. And yes.
And what happens, Jack, when you're a normal human woman and you shapeshift into a dog? For instance.
And someone might
what would
marry
seem normal?
You. Yeah.
All of a sudden, what would seem normal?
What would seem normal when you got old enough and if you fell in love with a person?
Right.
That you would. Okay. I'm seeing it.
And now.
Yeah.
It's all starting to fall into place.
It does feel like a slippery slope. And also, like, thinking about Lane as a warg in this context actually makes what Stacy does even more stone-cold, baller-ass, fucking badass.
Okay.
So, Lane immediately underwent a transformation. Stacy, Mrs. Cummings said, "We're going to miss you so much," added Lane. "We're going to miss you so much." Mom and Mrs. Cummings looked at Lane and me fondly. "Nope, it won't be the same around here," Lane went on. The moms drifted off, and Lane glared at me. A thought occurred to me then. "Lane," I said, "are you afraid of me?"
That's a cool-ass thing to say.
God. That's so cool to someone.
Next time my boss yells at me, I'm just going to like look him dead in the eyes and be like, "Hey,
are you afraid of me? It's fucking awesome.
God, that's so cool.
I just really like that. And Lane's like taken aback, like, what?
Yeah.
And then like Lane's like, no, I'm not. And then Stacy's like, at the end of the passage, Stacy's like, "Yeah, she was afraid of me." Fucking badass. It really made me
see
Stacy.
She was afraid she was
going
to pee on her. Because that's what Stacy does. She does a pee. She does a big pee.
Right, and they
and
bring that up.
And it's a symptom of her diabetes,
come up
and it's not like fun.
Stacy wets the bed at a slumber party and
make fun of. Yeah, but like,
and Lane is shitty about
Stacy
it.
Stacy does a big pee on Lane in her bed when she's sleeping over, and her diabetes is still not under control.
Right.
And that's what she's afraid of.
Right. No, she's afraid of Stacy, man. She's afraid of the strong woman that Stacy's becoming.
Right. Well, just to kind of flip the script a little bit, you're talking about the strong, powerful pee goddess that Stacy is. I want to introduce the segment.
Okay.
Kind of tearing someone down.
Okay, that seems fine. That's fine. You can't have one without the other. Yeah.
And it's called...
Yeah.
Claudia Kishi.
He's looking graceful as he gets ready to launch into a triple backflip. Here he goes. Oh!
Pool idiot.
He can't even salvage a big splash.
So they have a boy-girl pool party, which I guess is a type of party.
Yeah. I've never had a boy-girl pool party, but there's a lot of kind of parties
honestly,
I've never had.
This book made me urgently want to have a boy-girl pool party. I would love to have a boy. It sounds fucking great. A boy-girl pool party sounds fun as hell.
Yeah. I pulled my filmy tops and summery pants out of my closet and tried them on over the bikini. I even experimented with making a beauty mark on my cheek with a glop of mascara. But I didn't know what would happen to the glop when I went into the pool. I didn't want to risk the embarrassment of watching the beauty mark float off of my cheek or onto a raft or down a drain. And my question for Claudia is, do you know what a pool is?
I have a number of questions for Claudia.
Do
you know what a pool is?
Pool is not a place where a raft is or a drain.
No. It's also not a place where, like, this passage is her, like, putting together her pool outfit. But there's already a pool outfit. It's called a bathing suit.
Yeah, your bathing suit.
Your bathing suit is your pool outfit. You don't, like, there's nothing else
right
for the bathing suit. Like, even in Baywatch, they, like, which is a show about people putting on bathing suits, at fashionable and attractive people putting on bathing suits, they just put on their bathing suits. They don't have, like, whistles and bells.
I think there's
a case to be made. And I'm sorry
that if you're someone who's insecure, if you're a young kind of teenage person, who's insecure with your body, you maybe wear a shirt in the pool.
But no, that's not what's happening here.
It's not like you're thinking, oh, which shirt is going to be the best shirt I'm wearing into the pool? And it's also not a concern of Claudia's, you know?
No, she's like trying to put together a pool outfit, and it's like mascara and a beauty. She's painting a beauty. Is that a thing you do?
You paint your beauty.
Paint a beauty mark, I guess. I don't know. I was going to say it's why I don't have one, but I think I do have
one. You do have one. You've always had one.
Yeah.
Thank
you for knowing that. Thank you for knowing that.
It's right here on your cheek.
Yeah, and you look at it, don't you? And you like to look at my face, don't you? And say it.
I would call it a beauty mark. I would call it an ugly mark.
You did call it a beauty mark. And don't try to walk it back.
When I was
already noted.
I'm going to say 15, maybe 14.
Okay.
My eyebrows are kind of bushy, and they grow past where an eyebrow would grow.
Mm-hmm.
I don't quite have a unibrow, but I got this little tuft.
Yeah, you got a tuft. Yeah,
that kind of goes the wrong direction where a unibrow would go.
It's very handsome.
Made me pretty insecure when I was 14, and what I did was I took my mother's razor, because I was not shaving yet.
Okay.
And just did a quick little like cleanup, and went too far. Bit into the eyebrow quite a bit. So I took my mother's mascara or something and tried to like fill in the gap where the eyebrow had been.
Yeah,
you know, just so no one would notice.
Yeah.
But it was pretty noticeable, I think. And also, I was not like a master of makeup, mascara.
Yeah.
So, like, it smudged and didn't last very long. And, like, I was just like, I didn't know what to do. I was a mess.
That's good.
I think I just had to kind of, I eventually just gave up and let it grow back.
Did you know there was a period in my life where I wore guyliner?
That does not surprise me in at all.
What I specifically wore was very tight pants. And
I'm
going to
guess
2003.
Ooh, that's a little late for
2002 is when this was.
Okay.
And so I would wear very tight pants.
Green Day.
And not for me.
Billy Joel was doing it.
I wouldn't have fucking known because I was way cooler than that.
Yeah.
And I had like a Adidas track jacket that was like two sizes too small.
Brandon Flowers was doing it.
And I would unzip it and I had no shirt on, but I did have a chain around my neck. And then I fucking like full guy liner.
Yeah, cool.
And it was honestly.
Like cat eyes, like Cleopatra.
It rolled. It fucking rolled.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
I never had that phase, man.
Yeah, I wish I could still do it.
Yeah.
It was cool. It's like, I'm like the JNCOs I look back on as being like, it was fine at the time, but looking back, I definitely looked objectively fucking stupid.
Yeah, that's bad. Yeah.
That was cool. We should probably do some burns, don't you think?
Should we?
We got to talk about Frankie.
Oh, right. You're taking the wheel because, as you know, I accidentally reset my clock at the break.
Yeah.
So I'm flying blind here.
Yeah. We got about 10 to 15 minutes.
Till what?
Till we must stop.
Jesus, are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you want?
I supplied. Frankie grinned at me. Okay. Hey, happy birthday. That was it. That was all he said as the gate was closing behind him. So, I can't explain what happened next. Maybe it was his grin, who knows. But suddenly, happy birthday took on a meaning of galactic proportions, and that's...
Star stuff. Yep, further than stars and nearer than the eye.
It was as if Frankie had said instead, "You are a young woman of stunning beauty. Thank you for inviting me into your life. And also, why is it that we haven't met before? I know we're destined to be together." But all I said in reply was, Thanks. And it's my... Well... Something the youths are saying nowadays is hashtag swoon, which is
a lot of people are
horny for boys, and it's my hashtag swoon.
And it's my hashtag swoon as well. And he's and she later describes him as a Greek god.
Yeah.
I think he's a vampire.
You think he's a vampire?
Yeah.
Okay, explain.
Well, he like speaks in her head, right? He
does do that, yeah.
Like, he just says, happy birthday, and she hears all this extra shit. Later, she says, I was following Frankie to a lawn chair. Truthfully, I would have followed him into a nest of snakes.
And that's a thrall, if I've ever heard one.
And that's a thrall. And then later, so Janine is upset because she's in Frankie's thrall as well. Right. And that's like a big tension between Claudia and Janine. And then later, after they spend the whole summer together and Frankie's friends show up, look at this.
His coven.
His fucking coven shows up. Who's this? Asked one. So he takes Claudia to a swimming pool with all his friends. Who's this? Asked one. Is she your sister? Asked another. Nope. This is Claudia Kishi, said Frankie. And he might as well have been giving a tour of his house and suddenly got to the boring part. A closet. Claudia's closet.
Claudia's closet. Yeah.
That was the amount of enthusiasm.
Thank you for the nod, Anne.
Yeah, thanks for the nod. We appreciate it. We'll take what we can get. That was the amount of enthusiasm he was able to muster when he said my name. Claudia, these are my friends. Anna, she was the girl with the flowing brown hair. Lindy, she was the girl who wanted to know what Frankie had been doing all summer. Tracy, she was the one who was excited about starting school. Alexa, Morgan, and Val, blah, blah, blah. It does sound like Mambo number 5, and I just want to note that. Mm-hmm. But he's got this, like, coven of, like,
are you saying
everyone...
Lou Bega's a vampire too?
Vampire. I wasn't, but I now do think that.
Right. He's got a coven as well.
He's got a coven. Right. It's like a very Bram Stokerian vampire. Right. Just like these women just like are completely in his thrall.
Right.
And Claudia sucked into it.
God. I didn't even pick up on that. But now the all the pieces are falling into place once again.
Right. And it's vampires. It's
vampires. And that's a whole new faction.
That's a whole new faction. Well, and Anne changed the Matrix, didn't she? And she's now it's vampires.
Was there ever
and what do vampires do, Tanner? They keep you eternally young.
Or they eat
Anne's you. A vampire.
I think you can go one of two ways. And also, if you ever feed on a vampire, and this is Daybreaker rules.
Okay, Daybreaker
if
rules.
If you ever feed on a vampire, you remember Daybreaker?
Yeah, vaguely.
The Christian Slater
vampire film.
I'm going to say 2014.
I remember it.
If you ever feed on another vampire, you turn into like a... monster, like a bat monster.
Okay, right.
That's Daybreaker rules.
Daybreaker rules. I don't know what the vampire rules are that Anne's doing.
I assume it vaguely follows Daybreaker's rules.
You would think. Okay, yeah. You think that's like the main, like more so than
nowadays,
Bram Stoker.
I think so, yeah.
Daybreaker rules. Okay, right. I'll allow it.
Okay, great.
But he's very handsome, and so Claudia follows him around, and how come we've never heard about Frankie before? Because Frankie's a big boyfriend.
Can I talk? Well, speaking of big boyfriends.
Yeah.
And this is Anne.
Mm-hmm.
Changing the Matrix. This is deja vu.
Yeah.
They didn't have to say they thought I was too young to be spending time with a boy who was clearly more than just a friend. but I knew that's what they were thinking, is what Claudia says of her parents. Claudia is the first Babysitter's Club member.
Right.
With a boyfriend.
Right.
What Claudia is saying is that she has a boyfriend. And I seem to remember many, many, many times.
Marianne is the first Babysitter's Club member with a
boyfriend. Marianne is the first Babysitter's Club member with a boyfriend.
Wow.
And now I'm trying to like think back. Is that an actual memory I formed? Is that something,
or is it just
I've
something
just
I
sort
say?
Of made up? Or like,
no, Marianne's the first to get a boyfriend. That's canon.
Is it? I don't remember now.
Claudia's wearing a bra now, and the way she talks, you would think the boys had just been invented. Interested in boys. That's canon. But not Claudia's wearing a bra now, and she's on her second boyfriend.
Right.
Marianne is the first Babysitter's Club member to have a real boyfriend. But Frankie is a whole summer boyfriend, right? Summer. That would count.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So Anne's going back and just like undoing a bunch of shit. And she's like Loki, man. She's just like meddling with the fucking...
One more?
Yeah.
You want to break off one more for you?
Yeah, break one off for me.
It was a supremely hot day, so hot that the teachers in our un-air-conditioned school had opened every single window and door, and Mr. Redmond had finally, when he noticed that nobody could concentrate on anything but the heat, let us stop working in order to make fans out of construction paper. The fans didn't do much except keep the bees away.
Yeah. Classic.
And who's the fans? Is it us?
We're the fans.
And are you saying, Anne, are you saying that we've kept the bees away?
We're
with our
the,
attention,
the
with
fans.
Our love?
Yeah.
And who do you mean? Do you mean the girls? Do you mean you? Because we talked to the girls. We talked to a version of the girls. I've met the Babysitter's Club. Every single one of them.
Yeah.
Even Karen Brewer.
Yeah, oh, we've Sophia. Actually met them. Sophia.
Right.
Yeah. We're the fans.
We're the fans, and we didn't do much except keep the bees away?
Maybe we kept them away from something.
Oh.
Right? We're the fans, and our duty has been to keep them away from the fire or whatever.
Marrying dogs.
There's a fucking slip of marrying dogs. And Louie is back in this one.
Louie is
and
back.
It was hard to deal with a little bit.
Yeah. And Mimi's back.
It was tough.
And wow. I assume Boo Boo and whom
too
else
soon.
Died? Anyone
too
else?
Too soon.
There's no
fucking
Emily Michelle.
Oh, how soon have you forgotten Amelia? How quickly has Amelia just disappeared?
I'm honestly surprised Anne didn't like drop
just
a
be like, and then Amelia
trail.
Walked by.
The new
fully
girl,
intact.
Amelia, walked by and she was looking
her
so
her whole
healthy.
Body was there.
Yeah. Wow. I did like a command F in the book.
Yeah.
And I just started looking for some of the classics. I was like, purple, orb, fire.
They do it all, man. There's like a moment where like Chrissy's like looking into a crystal ball to try to like to see what the Babysitter's Club is going to be.
Yeah.
That's a fucking orb. There's like a fucking crazy dream horse moment.
Oh, right.
Like there's this like Chrissy has this memory of like the last time she and her dad were happy together, and like it was her like fifth birthday and it went really badly and no one showed up, but like her dad led her to this like on this weird scavenger hunt and they found this pony in a field.
Right.
And she was like, my dad is magical. And it's like, yeah, that's
manifested
a fucking dream
this pony.
He manifested a fucking pony. Right. All the stuff is there. It's all the stuff
all
is
Amber
there.
Theory. Whole book is
they Amber have the
theory.
Origin of arm stuff. Frankie glanced toward the hallway, saw that my mother was nowhere in sight, and came to stand close to me, so close that I could feel his arm on my arm. And an incredible amount of
sensation.
Heat.
Ooh! The amount of heat coming off his arm.
Yeah.
You could roast a fucking pig on that thing.
But you shouldn't.
You shouldn't. You roast a vegan pig.
Roast a fucking tofurkey. Tanner. Scares the skin all over your face. That's where we talk about our burns. There are some good ones in this, I thought.
There were a few good ones.
There are a few good ones. I mean, that like baller moment with Stacey was pretty good.
Yeah.
Are you afraid of me? Such a fucking badass thing. If anyone said that to me, if like fucking Cyril said that to me, I'd be like, yes. I had a couple burns.
I had a couple too.
Who wants to go first?
I think I probably have the weakest one. It's a good burn.
Okay.
But it's not really a burn.
Okay.
Saul goes first.
Yeah.
David Michael is being cared for by Christy. Mm-hmm. And they go to the playground to meet up with Marianne and Claudia, who are babysitting Jamie Newton and Jenny Prezioso.
Yeah.
David Michael stopped in his tracks and looked at me with exasperation. Jenny and Jamie? They're three, he said. And one of them is a girl. You'll manage. Anyway, I'll tell you a secret. I want a chance to talk to Marianne and Claudia. So could you help me? You could be like a junior babysitter, I said, remembering when I had first made Mallory a deputy sitter. That is now striking me as another moment of deja vu.
That's really weird.
Because I'm pretty sure I remember the book where Mallory was made.
Yeah, a deputy sitter.
Into a sitter.
And it was years after this.
Yeah. Since decades. You're a first grader now. David Michael brightened. Okay. He ran ahead of me to the climbing bars, where Marianne and Jamie were sitting at the bottom rung, Marianne dipping her head to avoid rows of rungs above. Hi, said David Michael. Hey, Jamie, today I'm... Hi, Jamie replied. Yeah. Hi, today I'm going to be the... Hi, Christy. Hi, Jamie. Jamie, my brother tried again. Today I'm going to be your junior babysitter, so you'll have to do everything I say. And my burn of the week is on David Michael via Jamie Newton, who just like couldn't be bothered to pay attention to anything David Michael says because he had to deliver his signature line.
Yeah, he stole from us.
Which he stole from us, if I remember correctly.
Beautiful. I got a couple burns. My burns are...
I still say hi to people.
I still say hi.
Constantly. That's how I say my opening line on Slack when I need something from someone.
Every email is hi. I got some burns on Janine.
Yes. Easy.
Can I give you a couple?
Easy.
I want to give you a couple and then we'll go. Ready?
No, I have more burns.
Okay, fine. I'll give you two, then you give me one, and then we'll go.
Okay.
A pool party? Where? Asked my father. I pointed next door. At the Goldmans.
If they don't mind. Daddy Pat?
No, this is Claudia talking.
Okay, gosh. Put me in the time and place, Jack.
Yeah, sorry. It's Claudia is asking her parents if she can have a boy-girl pool party. A pool party?
Daddy Pat was back.
No, he's not in this. You know that.
Right.
Because you did also read the book.
Well, I'm all discombobulated.
Okay. A pool party? Where? Asked my father. I pointed next door. At the Goldmans, if they don't mind. Well, they have been awfully generous with their pool, said Mom. I think they'd agree to that. I nodded, then swallowed hard. Also, I went on, I thought I'd invite girls and boys. I've already written out the guest list, I added. Oh, Claudia, I don't know, said Mom. But I'm turning 12, and it would be an afternoon party, not a nighttime party, and you and Dad and Mimi could chaperone. Of course you could. And I went on, Janine, you could invite a couple of your friends. That would be really... fun.
It wouldn't. Janine's a dork.
No, it wouldn't because your fur friends suck ass.
Yeah, except she does have this.
They're nerds. And she invites like three friends from her statistics class.
Yeah.
But one of them's the fucking handsome ass fucking Frankie the vampire.
Right.
I've got one more burn on Janine and then you can do a burn and then we must go.
Yes.
What are you going to wear? I asked Janine, turning away from the mirror. Janine looked at me in surprise. Oh, this. That? What you have on now? My sister was wearing jeans, and I couldn't help noticing that they didn't fit her very well, making her look rather puffy in places where she wasn't puffy at all, and a t-shirt with a picture of Albert Einstein on the front and E equals MC squared on the back. Janine looked down at her outfit and then back at me. Yes. All righty, I said.
Ace Ventura.
Yeah, she did. Ace Ventura. All righty then.
Yeah.
That's and it's funny to do it now. It's actually funny. And people, that's if anyone is rolling like, their eyes, it's actually impression. Funny to do Ace Ventura impressions yeah. now. There's
do
been enough
time.
Do
not go in there. Yeah. Pretty transphobic.
Okay, you can do one
film.
Great.
All my... where do I want to start here?
You can have one burn now, and then we must go.
Mom turned off the engine. Stacy, I'm not in kindergarten, I interrupted her. I can walk into a new school by myself. We have already been through this, Mom replied patiently. I need to talk to your principal and the nurse about your diabetes. Maybe to your teachers, too. All my teachers, I cried. According to my schedule, I was going to have 7 different ones. If you included the art teacher. And the burns on art teachers. Just sort of
anyone
this completely
who's ever taught art.
Unnecessary burn.
If you count teaching art
as being a teacher.
I did not notice that, and it's so fucked up.
Fuck you, Stacy.
Fuck you, Stacy. Good, we have to go. We must leave.
Also, Stacy calls herself Stacy McPerky at some point.
That was funny. That was baller. Stacy rules in this book.
She's okay.
She does this. So she has this like very funny moment where she's like, she's so happy to be away from Lane and the fucking like fucking shithead squad in New York.
Jack, I'm
that she's like really excited
feeling
to be
that urge.
Want to marry the
to marry
dog.
A dog.
Okay, well, just like hold it back and let me say this and see how you feel afterward. But it's like fucking badass. Like she like. She wants to get away from them, and then she's like so psyched to be in Stony Brook that she like refers to herself as Stacy McPerky because she's like saying hi to everyone in the class. And then there's this like there's this great moment where she sits down at the table with Emily Bernstein, and everyone stops talking at the lunch table and just like stares at her, and it's like this weird awkward moment. And then she goes, "Hi, I'm Stacy. I'm from outer space."
Yeah, fuck it.
It's funny as hell, and I want to marry a dog now.
Yeah.
And
how
do
we end up here?
And wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't that be nice?
Dogs are so cool.
Dogs are fucking awesome. Maybe the world would be a better place.
Okay, I'll marry dogs.
Something to think about.
Something to think about.
It's something to think about. I'd love to leave. I'd also love to go.
Yes.
And I would, yeah.
Particularly it's hard. Like, it's so hard.
To
Jack,
say goodbye. To yesterday.
To say
goodbye. To yesterday. To yesterday.
To yesterday.
Yes.
And there
and
used to be a
hard,
moment where we cherish these sort
and
of endings.
And we used to, didn't we?
Jack.
Yeah. When we,
where they
yeah,
had
well,
meaning. Where
yeah,
they had
and
power.
We did, didn't we? And yes.
And we sang
and
boys to
be,
men.
Yeah. And it's so hard to say goodbye to yesterday. And that's a quicker way of saying
and in
it,
front of
it?
Us is an
to, as we
inky
try to leave.
Black abyss.
Yes. Yes.
And we will step into it next week. And what will happen?
Infinitely long. Infinitely thin.
Infinitely longer, in my case.
Yes. Yes. Infinitely thin.
What if you slip into the event horizon sideways? You wouldn't be infinitely thin. You'd be infinitely wide.
Infinitely broad. Yeah. But if someone's watching you, you go so slow and time passes slower for them than it does for you, but then you never actually get into the middle. You just like blink. It's really weird
what
for the person
what
who's watching.
What do you mean blink?
There's a big flashing light.
Where?
And time stops in the event horizon. Don't make me explain black holes to you. It's very complicated.
I've seen event horizon.
I'm not talking about the
where
movie.
Where we're going,
we've
we don't
go.
Need eyes.
Okay. And what I would like to say is thank you very much for bearing with me. I'd like to thank the Baby Nation so much for bearing with us all these years. We love and kiss you so very much. And
we
did read all
the
Babysitter's Club books, I think. I think we read them all.
Well, not the Super Mysteries, but I swear to God.
We're doing them
we
for
are
live
still
shows, people.
Doing them for live shows.
Yeah.
Should we ever get back to a place where we're doing live shows again?
Yeah. But we will be back next week with something, and
who
I
knows?
Don't know what it is. But Tanner and I are having a meeting this Saturday, which is tomorrow, and we're going to talk about what it is. So that just has, so you know,
just to give you a glimpse into sort of our planning process.
We will be back with more stuff, and it'll be good and fun. And we hope you stick around with us. And God knows, there's more baby. Like we got a Babysitter's Club board game, so there'll be more Babysitter's Club stuff. Just no more books. I do think we've read all the books, unless. you'd like to subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/BSCCpodcast, where for only $5 a fucking month.
Or you, more.
You have
at least $5 a month.
Little Sister books already in a damn tank and another one every week. And right. We sing the descriptions.
Yeah.
Guys, please.
And tomorrow's my book.
And tomorrow Tanner's going to sing it. And I'm looking forward to it. And it's so fun. Please subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/BSCCpodcast. You won't regret it. And it helps to support our show and keep us doing what we're doing. Please also join our Facebook group. You can find it by going to Facebook and searching for it. It's called Baby Nation. Everyone's nice in there and everyone's good in there. And get in there and be nice and good with everybody else, for God's sake.
Request a Baby Nation, just while we're talking about it, just because we're reaching the end. Could someone do another one of those threads where they're like, hey, I was just doing another re-listen and I got to a moment that was my favorite moment. What's your favorite moment in the show?
I really like
those
that
are always really nice for me and Jack.
It makes me feel so nice. Yeah. I really appreciate those.
Yeah.
Please do rate and review our show on Apple Podcasts. It helps us to move through the rankings, and buy our merch, bit.ly/BSCC merch. It's too late for holiday presents, but why not treat yourself? It's been a difficult fucking year. Get a fucking wine crime shirt.
Go into 2020 looking fresh, looking fly, feeling good about yourself.
And we'll probably put new merch up in the new year as well.
Well, who knows?
All that remains is for me to say that this week we read a novel. It was called The Summer Before. It's the last Babysitter's Club book I can think of.
And the first one also.
Yeah, and it's also the first, and we all infinitely are in time together. And let's try to remember to fucking be both further than stars and nearer than the eye all at once, and everything happens all at once. And next week, I don't know. I am Jack Shepherd is my name.
My name is Tanner Greenring.
Please do remember to round off the corners in your bedroom, drown all your dolls, call your senator, and demand your right to bear time, and do not forget to let Daddy love you as much as I do. Remember the Delaneys. Remember the Trip Man. We know what happened to Boo Boo. We know where Ann put him.
Six feet underground.
Take your dream horse through that maze.
That's probably not accurate. They probably didn't bury him 6 feet.
They made a one Seth made like a fucking pine box for him.
Right. Not so
Claudia
true,
is wearing a bra now, and the way she talks, you would think that boys had just been
invented.
And so they bring them over, and Marianne is like, fuck you. I mean, and Claudia is like, fuck you.
You're really struggling with the difference between Marianne and Claudia.
No, I'm not, because I cut all of that out. Every time that that has happened so far, I've cut it out. So
I'm wondering what's going on.
Yeah.
Why all of a sudden, after 5 years of the very last book, you're somehow confusing Marianne and Claudia in such a confusing way.
I don't know, and maybe this didn't happen, and I changed the matrix by cutting every part of every time that happened out. And maybe it's in the outro if you're fucking lucky.
Right.
Yeah.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.